Talk podcast. We take a closer look at this season's Premier League. Peacock says no thank you to more soccer rights. Reasons to be positive about the next MLS TV deal. And we have your questions and answers in the listener mailbag section. On the panel today, we have Kartik Krishnair. My name is Christopher Harris. Kartik, the title races are done in Germany, Spain and France. Meanwhile, we're 1 month away from the end of what has been one of the best Premier League seasons in a very long time. It's more than just Liverpool and Manchester City for the title race, even though that has been exhilarating. And looking at the Premier League, there are so many storylines from the season, so much so that I think you and I could easily spend about 20 to 30 minutes on each team, but multiplied by 20 teams, that would be a 10-hour podcast. So we're not doing that today, listeners. So we won't do that. But for you, I mean, there's so much to talk about, right? But what are some of the storylines that pop into your mind that you're most interested in right now?
Burnley sacking, obviously, Sean Dyche, I think, is number one this week. As a bigger picture thing, I think there are two really standout storylines, or maybe three if you include Chelsea and Abramovich in the sale. But the two would be the title race between Man City and Liverpool. I often get things wrong, but I'm going to toot my own horn on this. Before the season, when everyone was talking about Chelsea because they were the champions of Europe, and United because Ronaldo had gone there and Jadon Sancho had gone there, I was saying it was going to be a title race between Liverpool and Man City. I did pick Liverpool to win it. So I, you know, at this point, I'm wrong about that. But no one was picking Liverpool, and very few people were picking Man City. And it was really, people were talking Chelsea and United. And it's, as I expected, has been these two teams because they have a clear playing philosophy. They have a settled squad. They don't have that many ins and outs during the course of the last few seasons. They have a very, very... they have a squad that fits each manager's personality, and those are the sorts of squads in this day and age that win. Now, there are too many people who look at YouTube videos and look at highlight clips and determine, well, Chelsea has better players and Man United has better players. Okay, they might actually have better players, but there's something about the settled squad and the overarching philosophy at both Man City and Liverpool right now. So that's number one. And number two is Brentford for me. They came up through the playoffs after a couple failed attempts, right? They had actually lost 11 times in the playoffs to get promoted from various divisions in the past. Came up through the playoffs. They're a West London side that historically has been the smallest of the four West London clubs, right? The other three are Chelsea, QPR, and Fulham. They... are going to stay in the division. They are basically mid-table right now. The two teams that were automatically promoted from last season's championship are probably going back down. And they've also signed Christian Eriksen in the middle of the season, who's had this incredible revival, a medical miracle for the ages. So Brentford is the other huge storyline for me.
Yeah. So when I look at the table, Kartik, when I look at the Premier League table, and I look from, you mean, team number one all the way down to number 20, like I said before, too, we could spend easily 20 minutes on each of these teams. The team that I have the biggest struggle kind of really getting my kind of teeth into is Watford. But what for you? Is there a storyline within Watford that you're like, oh my gosh, yes, Hodgson coming back from retirement to coach this side. But is there something deeper with Watford that maybe I'm missing?
Yes, their impatience with managers and the Pozzo family, the way they manage this club and all their clubs, right, Udinese and Granada as well, which is to have a director of football which is separate from the manager. Actually, it's not a manager at Watford. It's a head coach. And so they have a potpourri of players who don't fit together. This has been the case, actually, for six or seven seasons, right? Many of those seasons, they stayed in the Premier League by hook or by crook. Their pieces don't fit together. They have a glut of players. They move them in and out. And I think the overreaching storyline with Watford is, while that kind of model worked 10 years ago of having a separate director of football, bringing in as many players as possible so you have depth, so you have options, so you can absorb injuries, so you can move guys on to the other clubs owned by the same family on the continent, I don't think it works anymore. I think smaller squads, tighter teams, playing philosophies, all of that are really the takeaways from this season again, because it's Klopp and Guardiola at the top. It's not Man United with 30 players who've been signed by 10 different managers who are many of them repetitive, have the same exact skill set. It's not Chelsea who've just gone out and bought whoever was listed first on transfer market, right? It's teams that have clear playing philosophies, clear DNAs, clear ethos. That would apply as well to Brentford, who I mentioned. And the club that would most not apply to right now is Everton, who have just gone out and bought whoever was most readily available for them at the highest price, who had played for the biggest club previously, and they're fighting relegation in spite of having the seventh highest wage bill in the league.
Yeah, the storyline that jumps out for me out of all those 20 teams, Kartik, and I'm loving it this season in terms of just everything that's happening within the Premier League, but Manchester United, I mean, the fall from grace, I mean, this reminds me eerily a lot of Liverpool from from the 90s to the 2000s, where they went, after their rise, and winning all these trophies, a period of time, it was 30 years before they lifted another an actual top level trophy, the Premier League title or the First Division title. Manchester United, it doesn't seem, I don't think it'll be 30 years, but in terms of trying to turn this team around, and we're recording this on Thursday, the day that Ten Hag has been appointed manager, it's not going to start until next season, but the amount of work that's necessary to turn this team around is enormous. And it could be many, many years before Man United get into that top two echelon with Liverpool and Man City. I don't see Liverpool and Man City basically putting the brakes on anytime soon and kind of falling from those top two spots. So how long is it going to take Man United to kind of get back in those top two positions battling for the title?
It took them 25 years from 67 to 92 to get back into the top two the last time, right? And then in 93, they did win the title and kept winning titles till 2013 under Sir Alex Ferguson. Won a number of cups, though. I think when we talk about the 26 years that Man United did not win the First Division or Premier League title, it was dotted by a lot of cup successes in between. One very notable relegation, right, and famously lost to Manchester City on the final day of the season and were relegated. But here's the bottom line with United. Let's not talk about Liverpool and Man City. Let's talk about Arsenal with a young manager in Arteta and a young core of players growing up together, the way Man United probably should have done it with their young players a few years ago. Being patient, letting them work out their problems, their mistakes. That is happening currently with Arsenal. They're going to be a force to be reckoned with over the course of the next 5 years. Let's talk about Spurs. They bring in the best manager available on the market in Antonio Conte. Sorry, Man United has not... I like Eric Ten Hag, but he's not Conte level, right? And Conte has very quickly transformed Spurs from a team that was sitting, doing very little running, playing on the counterattack, to one of the fittest teams in the division with individual player performances improving dramatically. Matt Doherty, who's now out for the season, unfortunately, Doherty has improved immeasurably since Conte came in. You could say the same thing with Ryan Sessegnon. You could say the same thing for any number of guys. Betancourt comes in from Juventus, a player I rate very highly. Couldn't understand what had happened to him under Max Allegri at Juventus. He's come in, made a huge impact. So I think Man United are miles away even from... I know on the table they're right behind Spurs and Arsenal, but my assumption is next season both Spurs and Arsenal are much better than they are this season. They probably challenge Chelsea for third, both of those clubs. And United, they're sixth at best right now.
It's strange though, Kartik, because it's strange because it's different. This season feels very different than other seasons. And like, for example... If we're talking to our listeners right now and you're an American and you're a fan of whatever club it is, say in the Premier League, you can be a fan of any club in the Premier League, and there's a lot to be proud of. I mean, Burnley, yes, they're in the relegation zone right now, still fighting. There's still a good chance that they could escape that. You look at Watford, you mentioned too, in terms of they're going through a difficult time this season in terms of their philosophy. But if you're a Watford supporter, you got a lot to be proud of. It's a good team. There's some good players in that team. It's just kind of a doesn't have that team chemistry week in, week out consistently. Even Norwich City. Norwich City is battling. I mean, they're actually playing some good football now and again. Just I think the depth of that squad compared to the others above them is just too much of a gap. And they're used to being kind of that yo-yo club, up and down they go. But any club in the Premier League, you could say, okay, there's a lot to be proud of. There's been a lot of storylines this season. You can take any club. There's not one club you can say, like, hey, that's been a boring club. Nothing's really happened this season, and they're boring to watch. I mean, how would you rate this season, Kartik, this Premier League season compared to previous ones? Does this stand out for you too?
Yeah, it absolutely does. And as we talked about last week, there have been more standout matches between the top six, or the top five if you eliminate Manchester United, because they don't feature in any of these matches. The Chelsea-Liverpool matches, the City-Liverpool matches, the Spurs-Liverpool, Arsenal-Man City, Arsenal-Spurs. They've been phenomenal matches this season. And in the past, they didn't necessarily live up to the hype. And you rightly mentioned, I think, Jose Mourinho. You mentioned last week, Chris, Jose Mourinho had a lot to do with that. Him being out of the league, Antonio Conte coming back into the league, Guardiola and Pep still being here, Arteta being a disciple of Pep, and then and to a certain extent a disciple of Moyes, and then obviously Tuchel being at Chelsea, I think has really livened things up at the top. And then you go down the table, you see a lot of really exciting, interesting clubs. Crystal Palace under Vieira has been really interesting for me. We mentioned Brentford. I think Leeds is getting more interesting now under Jesse Marsh. And certainly when you look at Brighton, I know it's a little bit hit or miss under Graham Potter, but you know this well as a Swansea fan. When Graham Potter's teams are on, when they're playing good football, there's no one in Europe playing better football. I'm not saying they get the best results, but I'm saying there's no one in Europe that plays better football than Brighton when they are on. And we've seen some of those performances this season.
Yeah, Southampton's another club too that has had an inconsistent season, but under Hasenhüttl, I mean, they would, I mean, one week they would beat Arsenal, and then another week they'd lose 6-0 to Chelsea. But at times in this season, they've shown to be a really good team. Yeah, you look at any of these clubs, and that's the thing, even going into next season, Kartik, you look at all these storylines and all these clubs and how they're doing, next season's going to be even more captivating.
Yeah, and I think you've just hit on it. Hasenhüttl with Southampton, another great example. These clubs are going for it. You have very few teams that sit and sit deep, absorb pressure, and play in a low block consistently in this league. So Dean Smith going to Norwich. Norwich has been very open, and just like his Brentford teams were in the Championship and his Aston Villa teams in the Premier League the last few years. Everybody is playing football in this division. And again, that goes back to the point you made last week, which I think is the money point, Chris, that Jose Mourinho being out of the league has changed the entire deal. And I don't think he's coming back to England anytime soon, right, to manage. I think he's run out of clubs to manage in England. So the DNA of the league has fundamentally changed with him out of the league. It just feels like, unless, you know, maybe it was happening already and we were just so focused on Mourinho, we didn't see it. But now it seems like there's more open attacking football from top to bottom in the table. You get a team like Brentford come into the division, soar up mid-table. You have a team like Southampton. And people have asked me before about Hasenhüttl specifically, why he doesn't move on to a bigger club, or why has Southampton not sacked him when it seems like they're in a relegation fight every year. The answer to both of those is on the first, I think he has a lot of power and influence at Southampton and has a very special relationship with the supporters there. Second point is they have managed to escape relegation every single season doing it his way, playing good attacking football, being open enough to lose matches 9-0, as they have, and 6-0, right, as they have repeatedly in the last few seasons, but playing good enough football that on their day they can beat Liverpool or they can beat Arsenal or they can take points off Man City, entertain their supporters, and stay in the division. So I think Southampton very much is kind of the pulse of the league, if you think about it that way. And that was a great, great point bringing them up.
Yeah, Newcastle next season are going to be eye-opening to see what they do in the off-season, in the transfer window. West Ham, you mean Europa League semi-finalist now, coming up against Eintracht Frankfurt. And that's my match to watch this weekend, actually, is West Ham United against Chelsea at Stamford Bridge. Chelsea going through a rough patch. I mean, it's within 1 week they lose, get knocked out of the Champions League. They lose to in the derby against Arsenal, but then yet they beat Crystal Palace and are now into the FA Cup final against Liverpool. You go down the list, Aston Villa right now is in a free fall, Kartik. If this season continued for another few weeks longer than the May 22nd end date, I think Aston Villa would be in relegation trouble.
Yeah, I think they're barely safe as it stands, because I'm now backing off my prediction that Burnley would escape relegation. I still think they would have if they hadn't sacked Dyche. But now, as we record this Thursday morning, they're going to play their second match under an interim caretaker manager committee without having identified a replacement, having sacked a guy who is tested and proven at this level. So Villa is safe because of that. But I think there was a distinct possibility that Burnley were going to get a number of results. I really believe they were going to. I stuck with that prediction all season long. Everton had been picking up. We've seen a fight out of Everton the last few weeks that we hadn't seen previously. Them scraping and getting goals late in matches or creating chances late in matches. I see individual player improvement under Lampard with specific players, even if you don't see overall improvement with the club. I think if Lampard keeps them in the division and is there next year, they'll be better. And who's the other team that's been? Oh, and Leeds, right? We've seen definitive improvement under Jesse Marsh. So I think Villa would have been sucked into this. Not only if the season were longer, I think they might have been sucked into this if Dyche hadn't been sacked.
Yeah, Burnley. Anyone who watched the last weekend's game between Burnley and West Ham United will be, I mean, if you're a Burnley fan or even a neutral, I'm a neutral, Cornet deciding to take the penalty kick, what a difference that made, because he missed the penalty. If Jay Rodriguez, the regular penalty taker for Burnley, had taken that penalty, he most probably would have scored, and Burnley would have beaten West Ham United, not tied them.
Cornet also missed a sitter against Norwich, which could have saved Sean Dyche's job the previous week, by the way. I mean, just like a as gilt-edged a chance as you would get.
Yeah. So let's finish it off, Kartik, with there's only two teams we haven't mentioned out of the 20. Leicester City, I would have loved to have seen Leicester City this season in terms of, if they didn't have any injuries, how far they would have gone in ninth spot right now. And Wolves has been good. I mean, under Lage, yeah. I mean, they've done a really good job. And I mean, right now, as of recording this, in eighth spot, I mean, they're sitting pretty.
If Wolves had not had some untimely sending offs in key matches, in the second half of matches, I think it was Jimenez in two of those matches, they might be fighting for the top four. They started very poorly under Lage. He's gotten them playing some really good football, different than they played under Nuno, more attack-oriented, more possession-based, and have cycled players through, which they were a very thin squad under Nuno. He didn't like, which I think is a kind of a trend, to only want 14 or 15 guys. But ultimately, in the COVID year, they had a ton of injuries, and they were not very competitive last season. They've been really good. So Wolves, I think, are a team to watch next season. They may be better off staying at eighth. If they get into that top seven, they might be in Europe, and that might be a... an issue in terms of squad management. I think if they finish eighth, they might be more dangerous than if they finish sixth or seventh. As strange as that sounds, but we're seeing squad management issues plague teams all over Europe. Look at Villarreal. Look at Eintracht. Two of the clubs we've mentioned are in the semifinals of European competitions. Doing so well in Europe with a thinner squad for both of those clubs has damaged their competitiveness in their domestic leagues this season. And that's a history also in England. We've seen with teams through the years that's happened.
Yeah, and that's why this weekend, that game, that Chelsea-West Ham game, to me is my match of the weekend to watch. Just because West Ham have fallen off the wagon a little bit and now in seventh spot, but if they do get a win at Stamford Bridge against a weakened Chelsea at this point, confidence wise, then that moves them up at least closer to the race with Man United for Europa League spot. But who knows? West Ham United could go all the way and could go and win the whole Europa League at this rate. Kartik, what's your game to watch this weekend?
Yeah, I'll just do Der Klassiker because it is a special occasion. Dortmund have blown every opportunity they've had to get back into the title race. They did have a really impressive performance last week in a 6-0 win over Wolfsburg. I think it's been a 6-0. Might have been worse, actually. But again, it's the occasion. These matches are always they're always spirited if they're not competitive. And often they are competitive. So I'll go with that. 12:30 p.m. on Saturday on ABC. There's a full pregame show on ABC also leading into the match, ESPN FC pregame show. So that's my match to watch. Although, again, I will concede that it may not make any difference in anything other than pride between those two fierce rivals.
Yeah, I think it's more of a spectacle at this point in terms of just hopefully an entertaining game. Derek Ray on the commentary. You know what I mean? So it will be entertaining for sure. Could be lots of goals. Who knows? Bayern could be crowned champions. We shall see. Speaking of champions, Kartik, there was just to add one more thing in terms of what we've been watching this past week. US Open Cup, Tuesday and Wednesday, these teams fighting to become champions of the US Open Cup. We're in the third round, which is now finished. Fourth round's coming up in a couple of weeks. But some really good games, and congratulations to Detroit City, San Antonio, Motown FC, Union Omaha, Hailstorm FC, all caused major upsets this week, and some of these clubs knocked out MLS clubs. What's your for me, Kartik? I've been enjoying watching these games on ESPN Plus because all of them are available on ESPN Plus, and this is it. This is the last season on ESPN Plus for the US Open Cup. Next season is on Turner Sports or Warner Media or HBO Max, or we don't know. And we don't know, but Turner Sports didn't even mention that they were having the US Open Cup in their press release when they announced the deal with US Soccer. So I'm a little bit hesitant, a little bit concerned about what their plans are next season. I'm hoping that they're paying a lot of attention to it. However, at the end of the day, Kartik, and this is from just experience in terms of just talking to soccer fans and seeing what pages and what articles are of interest to soccer fans throughout the United States on worldsoccertalk.com, very little interest in US Open Cup. Hopefully that can change this season, hopefully.
Yeah, I think it's for lower division people like me. I mean, to be honest with you, I stopped paying attention to the tournament once USL and NISA teams are out and NPSL teams are out. So once it becomes a competition between MLS teams, it's less interesting to me. Congratulations, particularly, you listed a number of teams. Congratulations, particularly to San Antonio. That is a grudge match that I think we were all looking forward to for many years. Once we knew Austin was getting an MLS team, that then San Antonio, which has been one of, as someone who worked in D2 for many years, who worked in the NASL when we launched the San Antonio Scorpions, was at that press conference when we launched the team and worked closely with them. This has been a grudge match coming once we learned San Antonio was not going to be an MLS and Austin was. So that to me is the at least for me personally, the sentimental favorite of this tournament so far. That victory, Detroit City beating Columbus is tremendous. It's something. Detroit has a atmosphere unlike any in American soccer. So two great results there in addition to the other ones you mentioned. But particularly for me, the San Antonio one is tops, my favorite.
Yeah, to be honest, there wasn't that much of a difference between the levels of USL and MLS in these games. Like sometimes in the FA Cup, for example, it's maybe a championship club playing against a Premier League club. And the game is really close until maybe like, say, I don't know, the 70th minute, and then all of a sudden the Premier League club wins like 4-1 or something like that. These games were a lot of, like, you mean either nil-nils or 1-0s, like really, really tight games. What do you think, Kartik? Is it much of a difference?
Yeah, fundamentals. No, there isn't. The fundamental difference, and I said this even when I was working at NASL, USL is now D2 as NASL was when I worked at NASL. The fundamental difference between MLS and the D2 level is there are three or four standout players on each MLS squad that can make a difference in one-off moments in matches between clubs from the two leagues. Now, when you get to Division III teams, there's a fitness difference, right? So if you play a NISA team, for example, we saw it with Chattanooga, right, against Atlanta. If you play a NISA team, for example, they tend to drop off after about 60 minutes with their fitness levels. But if you play a USL team, they're fit enough, and they travel the same way. They kind of they train the same way. The coaching level is basically the same. I mean, there are some coaches in USL or previously in NSL, I would say, are better than many MLS coaches. So tactically, stylistically, very similar. There is just the difference maker where at individual moments, MLS teams have three, four, five guys that are match winners, whereas the USL / NASL in the past teams would have one maybe.
All right, Kartik, let's move on to TV streaming news, and I'll have you kick it off.
Yeah, in the recent past, a lot of our listeners and readers have said they'd love to have the English Championship, FA Cup, League Cup, and all these competitions on Peacock. So all the major English competitions would be available based on the same service. Based on an interview in Sports Pro Magazine, don't expect that to happen. This is what NBC Sports President of Programming John Miller said about the possibility of Peacock adding more soccer rights in the near future. Quote, "We made a big play for the Premier League because we feel it's the number one soccer league in the world. We don't want to be the network of soccer. We want to be the network of the Premier League." And then continuing, "There are a lot of other great soccer properties out there, but adding those properties wouldn't necessarily raise the number of Peacock subscribers in the same way adding a sport like baseball, which NBC doesn't cover currently, would," unquote. Things from this quote, Chris. First off, this may explain NBC's coverage preferences, which are often to act like the Premier League exists in a vacuum, and European competition doesn't exist or is secondary, and that other competitions in England don't really exist. I have to say they've done better with that this year. In talking about spillover from FA Cup matches, spillover from League Cup matches, and from European ties. But for several seasons, they were hardly even talking about those competitions. Mr. Miller might want to have a conversation with his counterparts at Disney or at Paramount about adding soccer properties and what that does for subscribers, because my sources at those other places tell me, and I think same thing with you, Chris, with your sources, that ESPN Plus adding soccer properties has increased subscribers to the Disney bundle. CBS Sports adding soccer properties has various soccer properties, random soccer properties, has added subscribers to Paramount Plus. So a very different view of things at NBC Universal, I suppose.
Yeah, just a couple of things on this, just to clarify too. So Peacock has signed baseball. So they now, which is really quiet, I didn't hear a lot about it, but Peacock will become the exclusive home to Sunday morning Major League Baseball games. So, you know, not a huge thing, but they will have baseball.
Sunday morning?
Yeah, in the future. So that's the first thing. But the second thing, I think it's more so about the Premier League, or actually NBC, right? NBC is spending so much money to get the Premier League, so much money above and beyond what they wanted to spend. And we're talking, over $1 billion at least. I mean, we have to go back to the numbers, but billions of dollars to actually get the rights to show these games. So I think it's one of those things that if they hadn't spent so much money on the Premier League, maybe they would look at some of these other leagues too, and maybe look at adding those. But Peacock still is a weird bird. I mean, myself as a fan of soccer and as a fan of English soccer, I don't have a team in the Premier League, but I have Peacock because, I want to watch that West Ham United against Burnley game. I want to watch those games, those relegation battles, that the Everton against Leicester midweek. Those big games, to me, are oftentimes on Peacock. So I have to have it. Now, but in terms of entertainment, yes, they're adding more and more original programming. And yes, they have wrestling, the WWE, which is a big deal. It's just a lot of different things. But I understand in terms of what NBC Sports is saying about the Premier League, and they want exclusivity. And they want big viewing numbers. They want things that will make a difference. But like you said, Kartik, I think there are properties they could pick up such as the FA Cup, such as the English Championship, and other things that would fit in well with their programming, and I think would actually definitely generate more interest in Peacock. I mean, it'll give you, I mean, if you're a fan of Arsenal or Chelsea or Man United or Spurs or one of the top six clubs, you may not subscribe to Peacock because you might be like, you know what, most of the games are on USA Network anyway. But having the FA Cup on there, having League Cup on there, Championship, etc., would make those people sign up for that service. So, yeah. So, listeners, Peacock adding soccer in the future, unlikely. Just a couple more things to Kartik in the news section. One, this is really interesting, I think, in that in England right now, and this has been this way since the. Since the 1970s, is that there's a TV blackout. So every Saturday, Eastern time now, from 10 a.m. Eastern to about 12:15 Eastern, those games are blacked out. So if you're a soccer fan in England or Wales or Scotland or Northern Ireland and you want to watch Liverpool against Man City or whatever game is on that's played during that block of time, it's not on television anywhere. Legally, it's impossible. The only way you could actually watch that game is go to the stadium and watch it, or you could listen to a radio broadcast. Now, there are plans afoot in England to change that. And we saw this during COVID, when COVID happened and the pandemic, and fans weren't allowed in stadiums. They temporarily allowed some of those games, those 10 a.m. Eastern to 12:15 Eastern games, to be shown on streaming. Now, clubs in England are looking at this, and they're actually wanting it to happen to make it so that there isn't that TV streaming blackout. However, this is the interesting thing about this, Kartik. The people wanting to make this happen, to get rid of this TV blackout, it's the clubs in League One and League Two. And the clubs in the Premier League and the Championship don't want the TV blackout to go away. Any thoughts on this and why the Premier League and the Championship in particular would be against this? Because the story, the thing that we always hear is that the reason that there's a TV blackout is to make sure that fans go to support their lower league clubs. What's your take on this?
I think there's still a view that if you air a Premier League or Championship match at a certain time, that impacts those clubs in terms of the fight for promotion, the relegation fights, etc., spots for in Europe, that
like attendance?
may impact attendance. I don't buy that, but I that's what I'm guessing it is, because it has always been the assumption that it would affect League One, League Two, and the non-league, which all tend to kick off their matches at 3 p.m. Local time. Although League One and League Two have now varied their kickoff times a little more than they used to, which might also indicate why they're less wed to this TV blackout than they may have been in the past. But it's a real mystery to me. Also, I'm just giving a theory. I'm not necessarily wed to that idea.
Yeah, listeners, if you have an idea of why you think the Premier League and Championship would be against getting rid of the TV blackout, let us know, because this one is kind of a puzzler. I just can't figure out what they have to gain by this, because attendance-wise, I don't think it would impact the Championship or the Premier League. It's more likely to impact teams lower down the divisions, but I don't know. This is a strange one to me. And then one more news item, Kartik. And last week, we talked about FIFA Plus and launching their streaming service for free and making all these games available, 40,000 games available per year. And you and I talked about it, and we said, this sounds a lot like MyCujo, which was acquired by 11 Sports. It felt like it's this kind of this free streaming site that offers games from all levels of different soccer, from women's soccer, etc. Well, this week, the news is that FIFA Plus has appointed 11 Sports to power and supply live soccer matches. So we were right on the money on this one, Kartik. This is essentially 11 Sports doing a deal with FIFA, and FIFA says, okay, hey, we'll take all of the content you have available and make this available for free on the FIFA Plus app. And I don't know. For me, Kartik, yes, the classic World Cup films and games on there are great, but I'm not going to be like racing to go to FIFA Plus to watch games that, to me at least, have very little meaning. What about you?
It's pretty niche, but I think there are probably games that I'll want to tune in for. And there's always kind of random viewing. I mean, the thing that I think Paramount Plus has gotten so well with having so much soccer content, and the Disney streaming services as well, to a lesser extent, is people who at random times want to watch soccer matches can just turn on, click on that app. And watch something random. So that's something that FIFA Plus will have. That's something my Cujo and 11 always had going for it. But it is very niche. Again, coming out of lower division American soccer, of 11 and my Cujo have been an integral part of that. And 11, I know the business model, having worked with Ricardo Silva, whose former business partner owns 11, Andrea Radrazzani. It's an interesting move, I think a positive move for 11. But then at the same time, 11 has been trying to acquire some first division rights to supplement their lower division and kind of just leftover things that they throw on the 11 Sports platform. So this might be part of that strategy.
Okay, moving on to listener mailbag. First up is RJ. RJ wants to talk about ESPN. RJ says, I was reviewing ESPN's soccer portfolio going forward, and honestly, it's pretty slim in regard to international tournaments and teams. Any chance that ESPN ABC buys just the soccer rights from Fox Sports? In a lot of ways, it's a perfect fit. I would think that would get regulatory approval. Kartik, yeah, there's not a lot left on the international side. I mean, so this summer we've got the Women's Euro 2022, which will be on ESPN or probably on ESPN Plus, most of those games. But outside of that, there's not much going for ESPN on the international game. Fox has gobbled up most of those rights. What do you think? Should ESPN kind of at least consider trying to figure out a way to buy some of the soccer rights from Fox Sports?
Well, that's if that's possible, right? They could sublicense soccer to ESPN, but I don't think they're going to. I think that Fox's strategy now is just to go into the international game. Those are tournament specific. Those are time blocked off, right? It's not a 9-month commitment in terms of programming and tying up programming like club leagues are. And it fits where they're going as a media company, Fox, which is kind of slimmer, more focused, and their focus now is on news and sports, right? That's it. So I think it would make sense, but I don't think it'll happen. I think Fox is laser focused on this. Whatever club rights come up, they're just going to pass on going forward. Although, again, they did show some interest in reacquiring the Premier League rights, but that would have been with a partner in Warner Media and probably not a huge programming commitment, tying up a lot of programming hours on the remaining channels they have. Remember, even spillover channels now, they don't have. They used to throw a lot of soccer spillover matches on FX, which is now a Disney channel itself. And was sold to Disney as part of that asset sale to Disney.
Next up is Aram, and Aram talks about Man City Liverpool, and he says that you might be interested in the opening minutes of a recent episode of the Athletic's Football Tactics podcast, where Jonathan Wilson describes watching the Man City Liverpool game while in Chicago and saying how pleasantly surprised he was by NBC's production and the old familiar faces of their studio team. Can't take it in a way, though, too. This feels almost condescending. It's like, you mean, Jonathan Wilson, I didn't hear the clip, but Jonathan Wilson surprised at NBC's production and some old familiar faces of the studio team. I'd imagine maybe, I don't know, maybe Danny Higginbotham, maybe he saw. I can't remember who was on the Man City Liverpool studio that team, or maybe Robbie Earle or Robbie Musto. But I don't know. I guess
they were on site that weekend, so it was actually a good weekend to catch them because they had taken their studio to the UK. And also mixed up their commentary teams a little bit because they had Robbie Musto, Robbie Earle, Tim Howard on site in the UK. So that probably contributed to it.
I guess in a way, though, too, Kartik, if you and I were in England and we were watching, turned on television, and they showed an MLS game, and we were like, you mean, we would be pleasantly surprised by, you mean, I don't know, BT Sports' production of Major League Soccer and some old familiar faces on their studio team.
Stu Robson does a lot of those games, right? So that's a guy we know, yeah. We know well.
That's true.
Among others.
That's true. And then one more comment from Aram about, this is about the UEFA Champions League. Do you and Kartik prefer both Champions League games on at once and then watching on Paramount's multicast? Or would you prefer staggered start times with perhaps one match starting at 5 p.m. in Europe and then the second match starting at 8 p.m.? I dimly recall UEFA moving towards staggered start times before the pandemic. And Kartik, if you may, I will answer this one. To me, actually, I prefer having the games both at the same time. Reason being is that it's an insurance policy. Sometimes, you mean, especially the Champions League games, you mean, some of them are great, some of them are like, eh. And having them both at the same time, I've been doing the Paramount Plus multicast or UCL multicast, which has both games on the TV screen at the same time. And then it flips back and forwards for the audio. And I've been doing it that way until, you mean, maybe it's Liverpool goes well ahead in a quarterfinal. And it's like, okay, they've got, they're definitely going to beat Benfica. Let me go ahead and switch to the other game and I'll focus my whole attention on that other game. And actually, that's a bad example because Benfica came back and actually came pretty close to cause an upset there against Liverpool. But for me, I like having them both at the same time because if there is one game that's not that interesting, the other one is almost guaranteed to be amazing.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I mean, it's my own personal preferences and biases, but I like the staggered start times on Thursdays now with Conference League and Europa League because those matches to me are more interesting and entertaining, and I can watch one of those matches and almost certainly be entertained and be captivated by it. Champions League, again, I know I'm in the minority, but this is my opinion. I'm not interested in it for the most part, right? The results are pretty predictable. And even when there might be good matches, it's the same teams always winning it, right? It's the same teams that win in Europe in that competition consistently. So, yeah, I like it just being one fell swoop and over with, and maybe one of the games keeps me engaged.
Yeah, and listeners, if you're wondering why the games are at the same time also, part of it, too, is because, I mean, if you're Benfica and you're living in Portugal, that's the game of the day. That's the game that everyone's focused on. That's the game that's going to be live in prime time in Portugal. And then at the same time, if it is, say, Chelsea against Real Madrid, if you're in Spain, all eyes are going to be on watching Real Madrid against Chelsea. And that game is that's the big one in Spain that night. And so on and so forth. You mean in Germany, it could be Bayern Munich playing that night. Everyone's focused on that one game. They're not paying as much attention to the other game that's happening at the same time. Now, globally speaking, and for most of our listeners who are based in the United States, it doesn't make as much sense to have both games at the same time because, you mean, why not stagger them? Because that will give us an opportunity to watch both games uninterrupted for 90 minutes. But so there's a little bit of, I mean, I think eventually UEFA will probably go to having it be staggered where they're not being played at the same time. But a lot of that depends on the international rights. If they're getting more money from the international rights than the rights in each of those European domestic countries, then there's more opportunity for UEFA to say, you know what, let's do a staggered start times because most of our money for these TV rights are coming from overseas. Next up, Liga MX, Bill says, following up your discussion recently about Fox Sports cutting back, I've noticed that with Fox's Liga MX broadcast, Fox Deportes, and occasionally FS1, they broadcast matches, home matches for Monterrey, Santos Laguna and Club Tijuana. But recently, I've noticed more and more of these games being broadcast on ESPN Deportes and ESPN Plus and not Fox. Any idea what's going on there? Yeah, and Bill, this has been happening now for actually, I think a couple of seasons. So a lot of the Liga MX games actually are on either ESPN Deportes or ESPN Plus. And I believe some of them, even some of the games that Univision shows, sometimes those will be on ESPN Plus also. So it's a deal that ESPN Deportes has done with Fox and I believe Univision to... They don't really broadcast it that loudly, but if you do notice on ESPN Plus, a lot of those games do pop up on there at the same time. So they're actually sub-licensing the game out to an ESPN Plus while still, for example, Fox still showing that game. But yeah, it's one of those things. I think in many ways, those games for Fox, Deportes, and FS1, I don't think are a major priority. And it's very haphazard when FS1 shows the games and when they don't. Fox Deportes, for the most part, shows more and more of them. But, yeah, I think it's one of those things that Fox probably looks at this and goes, okay, yeah, we will show the Liga MX games when we can. But at the same time, you mean we're getting money from ESPN Plus and ESPN Deportes. We're also showing the games. So basically they're spreading the love there. But hopefully Fox will start showing more and more of these games in the future. Speaking of Fox, Chris says, I wanted to offer my thoughts on the possible sale of Fox Sports, which I think is likely. In my view, the possibility of Sinclair buying Fox Sports would be a total disaster given Sinclair's complete mismanagement of the former Fox Sports' regional sports networks under their ownership. If Sinclair buys Fox Sports, I would expect FS1, FS2, and maybe even over-the-air Fox being pulled from streaming services, which would hurt us as soccer fans that are trying to watch the World Cup, Euros, and Copa America. This is because with the former Fox Sports regional sports networks, Bally Sports, none are available on streaming services like Fubo or Sling due to Sinclair believing they are worth more by offering them only available on cable. Sinclair's business model when it comes to sports is not logical and forces fans to pay more for services they don't want. On the topic of MLS TV ratings, Disco George says, I feel we need a meme that says, stop trying to make MLS TV ratings happen. They're never going to happen. The league and the broadcasters have created this weird self-perpetuating circle in which 70% of the teams are never on national television, so their fans never watch national TV matches. It just keeps repeating itself over and over again. Even I've gotten to the point where I'm tired of watching the same teams constantly, and I'm that weirdo cat lady who will watch a random USL match on a Saturday night just because it's on. I think the regional local rights are going to be thornier than it might seem. For example, fans in my local market can watch every league match on a digital over-the-air channel or streaming on a local TV station site app for free. No cable or streaming packages needed. People are going to be very, very unhappy if they have to start paying for a MLS subscription. Diehards and season ticket holders will probably pay begrudgingly, but a total paywall does choke off access to casual fans, unless it's included with something most people already have and is advertised quite heavily. Multiply that by 30 for all the different local markets, and MLS has a potential dumpster fire on their hands.
I think she's right. I mean, as she explains it in that mailbag post, I think that that's correct. There will be a backlash, and that is true. If you are in market, you're getting those games for free, usually on an over-the-air channel, or oftentimes on an over-the-air channel, if not on a basic cable channel that you're going to get anyway. That's part of your cable package anyway. So, yeah, I hadn't really weighed that, but I think as the way she lays it out, absolutely right. So you might get some season ticket holders, as she mentions, to stick and buy the package, but you probably will have an equal percentage of people just drop off and not sign up for the streaming service that that gets bundled with for these regional games. So that's another real potential problem for MLS.
Yeah, I've heard too from a lot of MLS fans who have said that if I'm going to have to start paying to watch games, that's it, I'm done. But I think in many ways, though, too, I think this Apple TV Plus deal that could happen could really be MLS's savior, in that hopefully Apple TV Plus says, you know what, we'll get the streaming rights to Major League Soccer. We'll get all the games except for maybe some of the big games on national television, which will be on ESPN or ESPN2 or Once in the Blue Moon on ABC. And Apple TV Plus, we will offer Apple TV Plus to MLS fans for free, at least for maybe 6 months, maybe it's 9 months or something, just to get them, say, to overcome that obstacle, to overcome that friction point where MLS fans say, screw it. You mean I'm going to have to pay for Apple TV Plus? No, you're not going to have to pay for Apple TV Plus. It's free. Just basically register an account and off you go. You can watch all the games, and then you can watch your Ted Lasso. You can watch all the Tom Hanks movies on there. And there's some really good Tom Hanks movies on Apple TV Plus. And then once you get somebody as a MLS fan watching and subscribing to Apple TV Plus for free, they'll see that there's Major League Baseball. They'll see that maybe there's going to be the NFL Sunday Ticket and all this programming. And then thereafter, you mean basically you move that person from the free account to the $4.99 a month account, which is still, you mean, very affordable. And then probably incrementally over time in the future, maybe Apple TV Plus will increase that just slightly as they add more and more rights. But I think that removes the whole friction point as far as the local broadcast. Just basically dump the local broadcast, offer Apple TV Plus for free, give them access to the games. And like you said, Kartik, you were the one that said, like, hey, let's just put everything on streaming. And this is pretty much as close as we can get to that with maybe ESPN Plus again. ESPN showing games on TV. The issue, though, is ESPN Plus. If ESPN says, hey, we want these games for ESPN Plus, we need these games for ESPN Plus, then that becomes an issue. Maybe there's a little bit of a bidding war. I don't think so, though. I mean, I think that, I think ESPN Plus would be okay without the MLS games. They've got all that USL content. They've got all of the Bundesliga. They've got all of La Liga. And they've got a whole bunch of other tournaments there, too, and competitions and leagues. Do you agree on that, Kartik? Could USL be ESPN Plus's savior?
USL gives them a ton of content at really same start times as any sort of MLS regional bundle, generally the same start times. In fact, it creates a glut maybe when MLS is playing, which might be why MLS is better off of ESPN Plus. But I don't think a savior, but I certainly think it would mitigate any sort of blow, large blow by MLS going elsewhere.
Dave says the Liga MX season, the format, a split season and the playoff advantage to better seeds, and the Premier League relegation battles are enjoyable differences from traditional US sports. I agree that MLS lacks a hook like that. Jason says the city I live in has no MLS nor USL team. Millions of us are like that still. How can I be interested in pro soccer stateside then? It's not for a lack of trying on my part. I have adopted Orlando City as my team since I visit Florida a ton, and I like their stadium and colors and history. But I reside nowhere near them, nor any other pro team, like I said before. Alan goes on to talk about Apple TV Plus, and Alan says, having Apple TV has made the method of delivery immaterial for me. It's a game changer. Watching ESPN Plus is as easy as watching ESPN or ESPN2 on Fubo. And then last but not least, Dermot has some feedback on FIFA Plus, the streaming service that FIFA is going to be launching this year for free, or actually has already launched. Are all of these in-house streaming sites good for the world's TV business? Of course, great for the fans, but if they make the games and programs easy to cast onto your TV set, it's a real winner for the fans. But what if after a while some accountant at FIFA says, you know, just by charging $1 a month, we can make a fortune. And if we add in a little bit of worldwide sponsorship before and after each program, before each game, wow, we are talking mega money. Is that the future? Does UEFA then start their worldwide $1 a month service and include all of the European leagues? Do all of the TV channels all over the world abandon soccer and leave it to FIFA and UEFA? What's the point in any TV channel paying money for the rights to a soccer match plus the production costs when it will be available on two worldwide channels for $1 a month each? The technology to have each game in your own language is out there. And what if a greedy FIFA and UEFA start, as every streamer has and is doing, increasing the monthly fees to see how much the worldwide audience will stand? So that's a little bit of a doom and gloom in some ways, or maybe not. Maybe that's reality, Kartik. Do you think, Ian? Do you think the actual leagues and TV companies should be concerned about FIFA? I mean, FIFA Plus, which is basically FIFA TV, and UEFA. UEFA has their own streaming product too, which is UEFA TV.
No, I think what was a concern, from what I understand, in hindsight, well, immediately after the Super League, by the way, we're one year on this week from the Super League fiasco, was that club channels would emerge as an alternative to broadcast networks, not per se league channels like Premier League TV, because the networks and media companies, they do deals with leagues, right? And they do deals with confederations, UEFA, governing bodies, UEFA, FIFA, CONCACAF, etc. There was a concern about club channels emerging, so keep an eye on that.
Yeah, that's something I'm really concerned about, though, too, Kartik, because the club TV channels thing could really unravel everything, because like even now the way we are now in terms of viewers, we're attached to leagues. Now I'm a fan of Swansea City, so I'm attached to the Championship. I watch a lot of Championship games because I want to see how those other teams do and how that relates to my team, and even if they're above us or below us or playing against us, I will watch Championship games even if it's not my team. Now if I subscribe to, like, if I'm a Man United fan and I subscribe to the Man United TV channel and I see only their games, will I then be interested in signing up to another service? Maybe it's another a club TV channel to watch a Liverpool Arsenal game or a Liverpool Man City game? Probably not. So the power changes. The power, it unravels the power of the leagues and then gives all the power to the clubs. And that's more concerning, I think, in many ways, too, because there's a sense of belonging. So we as soccer fans, no matter what league you watch or no matter what's your favorite league, there's a sense of belonging with that league, that you know kind of the main stories in that league. You've seen a lot of those games. And again, you're watching your favorite team play and win and lose and draw, but you're attached to that league in an indirect way. By doing the club TV channels, I think you lose all of that, and then you become, okay, I'm just so hyper-focused on my team, I don't care or watch anything else outside of that. I'm not willing to pay for anything else outside of that. So I'm concerned about that in terms of, you mean, that would really... I mean,
yeah, that's why there's the concern about it. You just articulated it, Chris.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it too is that we're already so fractured anyway. You mean our listeners? You mean in terms of soccer fans, we're fans of Serie. I mean, so many different leagues out there that we can watch, and I feel in some ways that the Premier League, because there is that sense of belonging, because NBC has done a good job of making it feel that we get to know all the teams and all the storylines, and there's kind of an attachment to that. We know this league better than any others, those who watch it, because of the way that they broadcast it. And if it did become club TV channels focused, you'd lose that. You would lose the sense of belonging other than to your club. And if your club's having a horrible season, you know what I mean? You're probably already paid for Man United TV, and that's it. You're kind of going to be less of a soccer fan, maybe, because you're giving up on Man United.
There'll also be a limit on dissenting views. So, for example, Jonathan Wilson says he was so impressed with the NBC studio. If it's Man City TV, which I've watched, or Arsenal TV, there isn't the level of critique or criticism. Chelsea TV also. The level of critique or criticism that there normally is on a regular broadcast. And Man United's a little bit of an exception with that, but that's a more recent phenomenon.
Yeah, the way it is now, I think it's just right. I think it's hopefully FIFA gobbling up a lot of these rights and putting them on the FIFA Plus streaming service. And then UEFA looking, I think it's an insurance policy from both of them. If they do need to go to a streaming service in the future that has this technology that can stream major games, when TV, you mean TV as far as kind of cable and satellite dies out, at least they'll be ready to broadcast these games at that level if they want to go down that path. I hope that they don't. I don't think they will. But it is interesting to think about it. Listeners, if you've got something you want to ask us, we'd love to read your comments out on air. You can always reach us via email through web@worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter @worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can always post your comments on the podcast thread @worldsoccertalk.com. Kartik, heading into another weekend, some big matches again from around the world. What are you going to be doing, and what should the listeners do?
Enjoy your football.